The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Good morning, Long Island, and welcome to DDI and Autism on 103.9 FM. Keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas. Again, so glad that you can join us this morning as we share and explore all relevant issues related to autism spectrum disorder. My guest today is Emily Hall. Emily is the director of the Sibling Support Project, the first national program dedicated to the lifelong and ever-changing concerns of millions of brothers and sisters of people with special development and health concerns. She's a social worker, author, and trainer who has provided workshops and groups for siblings and families, presented extensively on sibling issues, and has conducted and published sibling research. A sibling herself and board member of the National Sibling Leadership Network, Emily has written about her experiences. She's also the co-editor of the Sibling Survival Guide, indispensable information for adult brothers and sisters of people with disabilities. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ramis.
That's a nice, accomplished resume so far. Very, very nice. So why don't we reach in, as I often like to do, and find out a little bit about how you got involved in advocating and doing so much on behalf of siblings.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, first and foremost, I am a sibling, as you kindly mentioned. And so I think I was sort of born into this work. I have an older brother, Peter. He's 2 years older than I am. He lives in Brooklyn, New York, and he has an intellectual disability, and he really is at the center of many of my personal and professional decisions, which I think is really common for siblings, that our experiences as siblings of people with disabilities really shape a lot of who we are. And that certainly is true for me. I worked for many years in New York City at a large disability service provider at YAI. Obviously, you know, my experience as a sibling really drew me to that work and drew me to the disability field. And while I was working at YAI, I was lucky enough to attend a training. And this was a training that was offered by the Sibling Support Project, facilitated by Don Meyer, who was the founder of the Sibling Support Project. And the training was really dedicated to exploring sibling issues, exploring the unique opportunities and the unique concerns that siblings experience, and also to train people to support young brothers and sisters through these amazing things called Sib Shops, which I hope we'll have a chance to talk about today. And that training really, really changed my life. I was so thrilled to know that, you know, not only was I not the only sibling out there, because like parents of kids with disabilities and special health concerns, siblings can experience that isolation of feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm the only person who's going through this experience. And if parents don't have the benefit of meeting other parents of kids with special needs, if siblings don't have the benefit of meeting other siblings, that can be a really kind of lonely experience. And so attending this training not only opened my eyes to the fact that I was part of a large community of siblings, I was also just so thrilled and grateful that there was this organization dedicated to supporting other brothers and sisters like me. And so from that point on, I really did everything I could at YAI and beyond to try to create sibling supports. And that really led me to this position when Don Meyer retired in 2018. I had done some work with him, as you kindly mentioned. We worked on the Sibling Survival Guide together. I had written an essay in another book that he published. We invited him to come to our large international conference a couple of times. So Don and I, you know, we were familiar with one another's work. And when he retired, you know, I knew it was a calling, and it was kind of an opportunity that I couldn't pass up to just throw my name in the hat and see what happened. And here I am here in Seattle, Washington, as the director.
We're glad you are. You know, you mentioned, of course, that you have a personal investment in this area by virtue of the fact that your brother has an intellectual disability. And, you know, I'm just curious, in addition to the issue of isolation that you described, that's a real possibility for many siblings, would you agree there's also a sense of responsibility, a tremendous sense of responsibility, maybe not culpability exactly, but you, since that issue, the issue of any kind of disability can kind of imprint an entire family, with that there's predictable responses. And from a personal as well as an academic perspective, Emily, what was it like for you, and does that converge, does that reflect the literature on the subject as well?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm kind of a textbook SIB, you know, we exist, and I'm certainly one. So from
rolls
a personal perspective,
mouth, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
That's probably my greatest qualification for this job, honestly, is that I'm a sibling.
Sure.
And, you know, when I review the research and I read the literature and I meet siblings from all walks of life, there are so many commonalities. Obviously, we have unique experiences, but there are a lot of ties that bind us as siblings and our experiences. And so when you talk about responsibility, that's certainly one that many of us experience even from a young age. And I, you know, I see them now in our sib shops, these little siblings who are, you know, kind of walking around like little parents and sort of putting that responsibility on themselves to be responsible for their brothers and sisters. And that was certainly the case for me. Luckily, I had very wise parents and who sat me down and said, so by the way, you're the sister and we're the parents and your job is to be a sister. And our job is to do a lot of the caregiving and the babysitting that you feel like you need to do. And so for me, that was really one of the greatest gifts that my parents ever shared with me. And I know that for many other siblings, for many different reasons, that is not the case. And that these young siblings are really carrying a lot of responsibility on their shoulders. And a lot of parents think, oh, you know, my kid's great. They're helping out. They love being a little helper. And then I think sometimes it strikes them that, wow, I wonder what this is really like for them. Maybe this isn't such a great thing. And that can be really complicated for siblings, too, who really want to help and enjoy helping their brothers and sisters. And at the same time, realizing that there's kind of a cost to putting your own needs second. And many siblings realize that later in life.
Yeah, that's so insightful of your parents to have recognized that and had that talk with you. I think often in families where all the siblings are typically developing, there's maybe a natural protection from an older sibling towards a younger one. But this often gets turned on its head when somebody has a disability. And I think, right, in your particular circumstance, you were the younger sibling, right? What was the difference between the ages between you and your older brother?
So we're 2 years apart.
Right, 2 years apart.
And I think for many younger siblings, that's really common. And you mentioned culpability before. And I think it's really impossible to talk about being a sibling without talking about guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Same way parents experience guilt, siblings certainly do in many different ways. And one of the ways is, you know, surpassing those milestones, developmental milestones, social milestones, yes. That weird space when you become, you know, your older sister's older sister, you know, what does that feel like? And so in our, we facilitate online groups, closed Facebook groups for siblings of different ages. And we have Sib Teen for adolescent siblings, Sib 20 for siblings who are in their 20s, as you can imagine, and then Sib Net, which is our largest and longest standing group for adults. And in our Sib Teen group, we have, you know, a few siblings who are the only typically developing sibling among a set of twins.
Mm.
Or even we even have a couple that are the only typically developing sibling among triplets.
Oh,
that's a pretty curious mirror to look in every day without feeling some sense of guilt, right? Survivor's guilt. Why me? Why am I the typical one? Why not my brothers and sisters? They're good kids. They don't, you know, they don't deserve this. how did I, you know, wind up being the typical one? And so it's really helpful for siblings to have support and a place to kind of unpack a lot of this stuff.
You know, Emily, as you delineate the different age groups, with that, I have no doubt there are different issues and different concerns that are relevant to those different age groups, of course. You know what? Hold that thought, because we're just about to move to a break. I'd like to kind of begin right just where we left off. Talk a little bit about what those different issues might be, what it really means to be part of a SIB shop. So we can talk a little bit about that as well. You know, you're listening to Emily Holt, director of the Sibling Support Project. Let's talk about some of the issues, and we'll get right to it when we return.